For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the audio.
BT and Sal back on the fan. BT taking the, well, he's not taking the day off. He's taking the show off because he'll be in the Yankee booth tonight filling in for Susan, who's under the weather. So BT will be along with Justin Shackle for tonight and tomorrow. So it's me solo, and we started the show talking about the Yankees. I mean, another tough loss last night. The game went on forever, and the Yankees, you know, found another way to lose the game. They were sloppy all throughout. They couldn't come up with a clutch hit, 1-for-16 with runners in scoring position. You know the numbers by now. And even on a night where Soto and Judge homer and get things started and making you feel great, to me, last night was symbolic of the Yankees season, almost to a T. Judge and Soto homer, and that's what they've been doing all year long, playing at an MVP level, those two guys alone. But as a team, sloppy play, not good defense, not good base running, the lack of timely hitting in the lineup, of course, been an issue. The length of the lineup outside of Judge and Soto, say cost the bullpen, you know, ultimately not being good enough, costing them the game. Like, you know, the starting pitching, even though it was given the lead, gives it right back. That, to me, was symbolic of what the Yankees' season has been, where there are certainly some good things with the Yankees, and mainly those good things are the great things with Soto and Judge. But outside of that, they're just not a good enough team. And the best thing you could say, and people have said this, about this Yankees team is that, well, nobody else is really that good either. And that, to me, is not good enough. If you're looking at the weaknesses of others, that means you're not strong enough. The Yankees, especially after the addition of Juan Soto, needed to be stronger. And look, I know that Jazz Chisholm is out and he was a big addition, but he's not going to be the difference maker either. Can he help? Absolutely. And would it be an upgrade over DJ LeMahieu? Yeah, I really believe that at this point I would be an upgrade over DJ LeMahieu. At least you'd get the effort and the hustle. And look, I'm not trying to say that I'm a better ball player than LeMahieu. I know my strengths and weaknesses. But, I mean, he's done and the Yankees keep running them out there. Point is, Jazz will be an upgrade, but it can't be, well, they don't have Jazz Chisholm, season's over. Or waiting for him to be the savior. The Yankees didn't do enough in the offseason to change what was a bad team last year. They thought that it was just Aaron Judge being hurt. They were wrong. Giancarlo Stanton, Gleyber Torres. How about Anthony Volpe? We got into that yesterday. We discussed it a lot today. In case you missed anything, check out on the Free Odyssey app. You know, Volpe, or the conversation of Volpe got testy with John Boy and Aaron Boone during the weekly spot he has on the Talking Yanks podcast. Now, John Boy was right, and Boone was defensive, and wrong again. And the Yankees, as an organization, have done this before. They think they're smarter than everybody else. They think they're right, and we're wrong. The results and the records and the stats show that we're right, and they're wrong. Whether it was Gallo or Hicks or Donaldson or IKF at shortstop or now Anthony Volpe. And nobody's saying send Volpe down to the minor leagues. Like, that's crazy talk. Although, for some reason, the Post asked Brian Cashman, I don't know why they would get the minor league stuff. John Boy was saying, give the guy a little bit of a breather, a little bit of a reset, which is fair, being that, you know, he had a down rookie year, but okay, he's a rookie, hit with some power, maybe the average will get picked back up. Fair enough, the average did get picked back up this year, but now he's a 250 hitter, and the power's down. He's only got 11 home runs. So what is Volpe as a player? You look at other young shortstops around the league, they're thriving. The stars, the top picks, the hyped guys. Well, that's what Volpe was supposed to be. He's shown flashes of it, but he's been inconsistent. And that's part of the Yankees' problem. They relied on Volpe to be a big-time impact, you know, budgeting superstar. And he's not that. They were relying on that to a certain extent from Austin Wells, and Wells is starting to emerge as an impact bat, which is nice, and it's led to the Yankees playing much better baseball as of late. But even when I say much better baseball as of late, look back at their record since June 1st. June 1st. June, July, August. 2.5, nearly 3 months. The Yankees have the 18th worst record in baseball. Excuse me, the 18th best record in baseball, however you want to put it. They're 18th. You know, it goes 1, 2, 3, and so on. They're 18. The Mets are actually fourth there. Now, that doesn't mean that the Mets are better than the Yankees, certainly, but the Yankees, since June 1st, have the 18th best record in baseball. That's not nearly as good enough. So am I supposed to just minimize that larger sample size and say, well, their record's as good as anybody else. They're right there with the top records in baseball. Or, and then factor in April and May more significantly. Or say, yeah, but since June 1st, they're 18th, whereas the Astros are second. And they've been playing much better baseball more recently for an extended period. Look at Verdugo and what he's done. Look at what Glaber has done this year. Obviously, LeMahieu has been washed up. These are the same guys. Yankees didn't have a backup plan for Anthony Rizzo, clearly, or they didn't have a good enough one. What'd you think? Rizzo wasn't going to get hurt. Now, you know, maybe a fluke thing, but he did get hurt. You had to think at some point Rizzo was going to get hurt. Stanton was going to get hurt. Think about what we're talking about here. The core, again, outside of the two greatest players that we've ever seen here together with Judge and Soto, and even with those guys, by the way, I should add, that with those guys playing at an MVP level and both being healthy and in the lineup pretty much every day, since June 1st, the Yankees still have managed to have just the 18th best record in baseball. So how does that work exactly? Well, nobody else around them is doing anything well enough. Whether it's the starting rotation, whether it's the bullpen, whether it's just the sloppy play in general on the base paths, in the field, whether it's in that lineup, or as we were getting back to the main point before, they run it back with Rizzo to start. Of course, he's been hurt for a while, so hasn't been there. DJ, Glaber, Stanton, these are all big parts of why the Yankees haven't been good enough in recent years. And yet the Yankees came into this year, even after adding Juan Soto, relying heavily on these guys. And the thought was, well, going to the trade deadline, Yankees aren't it. They played like the second worst team in baseball, only second to maybe the worst team in baseball history this year in the Chicago White Sox, looking to break the 62 Mets record for the worst team ever. The Yankees were second to them for a 7-week stretch. And yet they win 5 games, 2 in a row against the Red Sox, and were fortunate to win at least that second game on Saturday night. Almost lost that one. And then sweep the Phillies. So they win 5 straight, and everybody's like, oh, the Yankees are fine. Oh, yeah? Well, how have they been since then? A 500 team. So for an extended period, not a 2-week bad stretch, talking about 3 months, the Yankees have been a team that's a game under 500 and the 18th best team in baseball. It can't be good enough to just say, well, nobody else is really that good either. The Yankees should be taking advantage of that, especially when they have the two best players in the sport hitting back-to-back in their order. They should be head and shoulders above everybody else going into the postseason, and they're not. And maybe even worse than them not being head and shoulders above everybody else is that they don't acknowledge their weaknesses. I asked Brian Cashman flat out, what's your biggest weakness? He said they didn't have any. Imagine that. They didn't have any. I mean, I was kind of teeing him up for an easy answer, like, all right, you're a great team, but you have to have all weakness. What's your biggest area of concern? Don't have one. Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Yankees are in the clubhouse thinking that they did enough to build a team that could win a World Series. And look, you get to the postseason, anything could happen. And maybe this will be the year. The first year since 2009 that the Yankees get hot in the postseason and go on to the World Series. Doors wide open for them. Nobody else is there, so maybe this will be the year. But instead of going into the postseason feeling like the Yankees are the best team and it's their World Series to lose, it's they're one of a bunch of teams that anybody that gets in the postseason can make the World Series and get to and win a World Series. The Yankees are just like everybody else, and that should not be good enough for anybody, but especially for them. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires. From Connecticut to Maine, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Richard is calling from Mount Vernon. What's up, Richard?
Yeah, this is Richard.
Hey, we went over that. What's up, Richard?
Yeah, Grissom got to be this DFA. Because if you put a guy to pinch run, your job is to pass ball, wild pitch, you take second base. And then your job is he score on a double. And another thing about Aaron Boone is, why you keep on putting DJ Lemore out there and he can't hit? Pinch hit for him for Ben Rice. Ben Rice made contact.
Yeah, I don't know how you can continue running out. And thank you for the call, Richard. I'm not going to blame Aaron Boone on this. To me, this is an organizational thing and a player's thing more than a manager. But I can't say that Boone has... My biggest issue with Boone is that he doesn't hold guys accountable enough. And he's always defending them. Always. Even when it's blatantly obvious that a player is struggling or can't be defended, he's always trying to paint the positive picture. Hey, that's one of the reasons he got the job. So that's by design. That's on Cashman and the Yankee organization. They wanted a players manager who's going to, for lack of a better term, coddle the players. And that's what Boone does. And he defiantly defends them. And even in a case where John Boy, you know, who has Boone on the weekly spot for the Talking Yanks podcast, wasn't even ripping Volpe. It wasn't like the way that we talk about DJ LeMahieu or Gleyber Torres. He was just saying the kid's clearly struggling, which he is. I mean, those are the facts. It's not opinion. And Boone defiantly gets into it. He's a winning player. And Boone basically says the same thing about Gleyber Torres. And he doesn't say he's a winning player, because how could you say that and be taken seriously? You can't, but he defends everybody. It's hard to take. How can you acknowledge that Volpe's struggling and far under delivering the lofty expectations that were put on him by the Yankees and by his draft pick status? Brian Cashman himself said that going into this year, Volpe was going to be raking, or, you know, be an offensive force or crushing it, whatever his exact words were. Well, how's that now? He's hitting 250 with 11 homers. I don't know about you, but that's not my definition of crushing it. And yet Boone say, oh, he's a winning player. He's the best defensive player. Okay, yeah, like, he's a very good defensive player. I don't think he deserved the Gold Glove last year. This year, maybe you can make a case. He does have 14 errors. I mean, let's not omit that. Does he get to a lot of balls? Sure. You know, Boone also, these are the same guys that defended IKF defensively at shortstop. When anybody who's watched baseball for any extended period in their life can tell you he's not a good shortstop. I'll admit, I didn't watch IKF when he was with the Rangers. But all I heard was, oh, he's a Gold Glover, Gold Glover. And then I watched him play the first week and I said, this guy's a Gold Glove shortstop? That's me. So if I could see that and say that, then they should be able to see that. And eventually they did. Eventually. I saw that the first week of the year. They waited till the last week of the year to move him off shortstop. So this is a repeated pattern here. This is the Yankees' MO for the last several years. Josh Donaldson, Joey Gallo, Aaron Hicks, Gleyber Torres, shortstop, second base, IKF. On and on and on we go. And this year it's Gleyber again. It's Volpe. It's LeMahieu, again, all different extent. I'm not saying jettison Anthony Volpe or send him down, but let's acknowledge that he's nowhere near what you expected him to be. I am saying cut LeMahieu. I've said that for a while. I just don't get it. Oswaldo Cabrera brings more to a game than DJ LeMahieu does. So I'm not sure why LeMahieu can warrant any playing time. Remember, the Yankees also are a team that sent out there in the Subway Series Jamai Jones to bat leadoff and J.D. Davis to hit cleanup. They did that. The New York Yankees did that. I didn't do that. Don't shoot the messenger. They did that. By the way, if you are going to have those guys in the lineup, which you shouldn't, how could you have them batting leadoff and cleanup? Those would show me that the Yankees, you know, those moves show me that the Yankees don't have a clue. Or at least think that they're smarter than everybody else. And then don't acknowledge it until it's too late. That's been the pattern. Whereas when I was growing up, the Yankees, the pattern was they were far better and more aggressive than anybody else. Not every move they made was the right one, but they always got the best players. They always tried that much harder and usually succeeded than anybody else, whether it is in payroll, whether it is in performance. So they're held to those standards because they're the greatest franchise in the sport. And they have not lived up to those standards. And they have not acknowledged that they're not living up to those standards. It's scary. John is calling from Brooklyn. What's up, John?
Hey, what's up, man? You know, you guys are all talking like some really good stuff. I just, you know, to touch on it further, I think like our biggest issue, and we all agree, is that like Boone Orr and Cashman have like inability to make like these really hard decisions that might hurt people's feelings. and it feels like there's no sense of urgency. So I just want to tell you real quick what this is going to be, how I would make the changes right now. You tell me if you would agree, okay? When a lefty is pitching, Oswaldo's at first, and Peraza is at third. Grisham comes back, this changes, right? When a righty is pitching, Ben Rice is at first, and Oswaldo is at third, all right? Verdugo's on the bench. Grisham is DFA'd. Jason Dominguez is playing left. DJ LeMahieu, that's a very hard DFA. Maybe you can super utility him instead.
No, but that's, very but hard that's what DFA you're doing. Too, but why is that a hard DFA? That should be the easy person, move.
It's just like feel. That's the only DFA that would make my feelings hurt, because it's like we love DJ, but it sucks that he sucks now. But
all right,
Bob,
what are you going to do?
You got to do what you got to do.
He's a nice guy. Bullpen, that's great. He can't play anymore. I mean, I get what you're saying.
Not for the bullpen, though.
Go ahead.
We got a tandem of my first choice for closing games, because we're from New York, and when we get in trouble, we call our cousins. They handle things for us. So that's going to be my first guy. Then it's Holmes. Then it's Weaver, and then it's Canely. And we match it up. We do things like that. We don't make a defined closer, because Clay Holmes can't handle that.
John,
and honestly, if you take him off of that, maybe he does better.
John, think about all that you've said, okay? You've said a lot there. You agree you've said a lot?
Yes.
Does that sound like a World Series winning team?
I see, like, you know, this is the type of season it looks like with the highest projected team to win only 95 games. It looks like the World Series winner is going to be the team that got hot at the right time. And it looks like Arizona could be headed back there.
Yeah, fair enough, and thank you for the call. But the point is, you just went over a litany of moves that you think the Yankees have to make to get better. We've been discussing this all year long, whether it's the trade deadline. They need, like, this is not a surprise. This is not an overreaction to Clay Holmes blowing his 10th save of the year. I've been saying since the beginning of the year, Clay Holmes isn't it. They need to get a real closer. It's why I wanted to get Josh Hader in the offseason. But then if you further it in the regular season, okay, well, Holmes struggling a little bit, blown saves. Clearly the Yankees needed another arm. They knew that they needed another arm. They just didn't get the best arm available or the second best arm available. They got smart and they thought they were getting too cute or whatever, and got Mark Leiter, who's an arm. He's not the arm. He's an arm. And now you're talking about making Cousins a closer. Hey, look, maybe they shouldn't have a closer. Figure it out. But that doesn't give me confidence. And again, the best thing you said was, yeah, well, in a year where it looks like the best team's going to win 95 games, it's going to be the team who gets hot. That's what you're going to rely on instead of going out there and taking it? You're going to rely on, well, everybody else thinks too. Maybe we get hot at the right time. Not to mention all the other changes that you want to make. You have to take feelings out of it, too. It's nothing personal. DJ LeMahieu is washed up as a baseball player. Maybe a great guy, and he was a great player. Yankees made a great signing with LeMahieu initially. It was a great signing. Remember, the Mets, instead of getting LeMahieu, and I don't know if they had a chance, but they got Jed Lowry. Come on. And the Yankees got LeMahieu. And people at the time, and I remember getting mocked on Twitter for this at the time, and I was like, oh, of course, the Yankees, you know, Yankees playing chess, everybody else playing checkers. They signed LeMahieu. I'm paraphrasing myself here, but Yankees signed LeMahieu way better than Jed Lowry. Mets fans, oh, what are you kidding me? Okay, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay, Yankee homer. Well, no, just Jed Lowry was not as good as LeMahieu, and it proved that way for a few years. Or period, it proved that way. But it's over with LeMahieu now. It's time to move on. You can't worry about his contract or his feelings. This is the New York Yankees. You're worried about feelings? Well, it's a tough, you know, we got to keep him on as a super utility guy because it's tough to make that decision. How is it tough? He's not good at playing baseball anymore. It's not tough. It's easy. LeMahieu's made it easy for you. Oswaldo Cabrera's got to be in the lineup. And I'd like to see Peraza in there too. By the way, those wouldn't just be the... It's not just about removing LeMahieu. Gleyber Torres is a problem. Verdugo's been a problem. I still don't love Stanton in the lineup. Again, Volpe, the one guy I do love, he's still inconsistent and not living anywhere close to the expectations that you need. If the Yankees are going to win the World Series, it's because Volpe's going to go on a heater. Now, he's got the potential to do that, But is he going to do it come October? I don't know. Based on what? What would give me the confidence?
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Confidence is going to go on a heater.
Annoy people on the quiet car and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
It is a Jersey Mike's Yankees box office blitz. We've got a pair of field level tickets. See the Bronx Bombers against Colorado at Yankee Stadium on Sunday, August 25th. Right now, be caller number 13 at 866-540-WFAN. That's 866-540-9326 for your chance to win. Go from Jersey Mike's, the official sub sandwich shop of the New York Yankees box office blitz, and the Fan. Listen again tomorrow for another chance to win. So my buddy Brian Hoke's tweet from last night, the FanGraphs odds to win the World Series, the favorites right now, Dodgers at 16.7%, and the Yankees are second at 15.3%. And to me, that just means absolutely nothing. And also plays to the point of what I'm talking about. Well, what are their odds to win the division? And if they were that good, and everybody thinks that the Yankees are that good and really could be a World Series winning team, how come they haven't pulled away from the Orioles, who haven't been able to do anything well for the better part of the majority of the season, as a matter of fact, but at least last 3-4 months as well? So just because everybody, again, what's the Yankees record? Go over the odds, go over the percentages and all that stuff. And again, we know that the Yankees going into the postseason, if you get into the postseason, not just the Yankees, it's anybody, if you get into the postseason, as is proven in the National League the last couple of years with both the Phillies and Diamondbacks getting to the World Series kind of out of nowhere, if you get to the postseason, you could go on a run. But then that to me means the Yankees are just in the bunch of anybody else. Well, then by that theory, so could the Twins, so could the Guardians, who beat the Yankees last night, so could the Orioles. So could the Astros, who always are in the World Series? Well, I mean, okay, then all those teams could go too. What's their record since June 1st? Like, let's not pretend, oh, you want to ignore. As I said to start the show, and I don't think anybody's talking about this enough, the best thing that you could say about the Yankees team this year, and people have said it quite a bit and they're continuing to say it, the best thing you could say about the Yankees team this year is that, well, nobody else is that good either. That's good now? We're getting that pathetic in sports that's going to be the standards? Well, nobody else is really good. It's been the worst season since 2014 as far as teams go around the league, and you know, the Yankees have as good a chance as anybody. And when I say that, I mean according to the Jeff Passan tweet the other day or earlier in the week, that there's no team that's projected to finish above 95 wins. The last time Major League Baseball went a season without a 100-game winner was 2014. Not to mention the run differential, which, yeah, let's value the run differential. Yankees right there. Are they the best? Plus 112. Yeah, Yankees lead the league in run differential. There you go. Now you know why Cashman and Boone defending this team so much. It's the run differential. Who cares that they lost 3 in a row? Who cares that they were 1-for-16 with runners in scoring position last night? Who cares they're throwing the ball over the place or making silly decisions or getting thrown out at home? Who cares about that? Look at the run differential. Plus, of course, Soto and Judge. Well, if Soto and Judge were so, you know, if that's how you build a team, and again, those guys are great. Nobody's knocking them, believe me. But if it were just about building those two guys, and that's it, having the superstars, two of the best players in the sport, then how come the Yankees have the 18th best record in the sport since June 1st? Those guys have been healthy, have they not? I mean, I've been watching. I see them in the lineup every day. Both Judge and Soto were healthy, and both Judge and Soto were playing at the peak of their game. Soto's having a career year. Judge is having another career year. May not get to 62 or 63, but still, you could argue that this season overall has been better than 62, or at the very least on par with it. might win the Triple Crown, for goodness sake. So if you have Judge, who might win the Triple Crown, Soto having a career year playing like a legit MVP, wouldn't you think, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's just me, call me crazy, that the Yankees might have a little bit better of a record since June 1st for the last 3 months? I think so. But they don't. Why is that? Because they're not good enough. Not to mention Luis Gil, who had to leave last night with lower back issues. Now, look, if you Gil has been, I was going to say their best pitcher, but I don't know if I could even say that with Cole coming back. But without Gerrit Cole, Gil was an ace. And Gil was pitching like a guy who was going to start the All-Star game. That's how dominant he was to start the year. And I do think that was a big factor in why the Yankees got out to such a great start. Remember, their start, their hot start, April, May, was large in part, obviously, Judge and Soto, or I shouldn't even say Judge, but Soto and Volpe at the beginning of the year was hitting, Verdugo was hitting, but mostly it was because of Gil, Rodon, Stroman. You could even throw in Clark Schmidt before he got hurt. Those guys were carrying the Yankees early on. And then they were getting the timely hitting, or they were just getting hitting in general from Soto, from Volpe, from Verdugo, mainly those guys. So if I say that Gil is going to have any kind of issue, and we've been waiting for something with Gil, whether it's the innings catching up to him or whatever it may be, maybe a transition to the bullpen, the Yankees can't afford to lose Luis Gil for an extended period here. And they need to have him ready to go in the postseason, whether it be as a Game 2 starter. And I personally think that that's how they project best with Cole and then Gil in their rotation going into the postseason, or whether it's Gil being a dominant arm out of the bullpen. But, I mean, let's not minimize his importance this year and overlook what went on. It doesn't seem to be too serious, but still, I mean, now's not the time for this to be happening. Just the Yankees overall have not been good enough. I'm not sure how anybody watching this team on a day-in, day-out basis can feel that they can be. You could still be hopeful that they have as good a chance as anybody else because they're going to be a playoff team, sure. But, come on, we know better. Especially watching the Yankees and their standards, we know better. Nothing you have seen in the better part of 3 months would indicate that this team is going to all of a sudden click once the postseason starts and get hot and go to and win their first World Series since 2009. Zach is in Tom's River. What's up, Zach?
What's up, my man? How you doing, bro?
How are you, Zach?
I'm all right. Yeah, so last night I'm watching the Phillies-Braves game, and I forget who the broadcaster is, and I hear him say, oh, you know, since the start of the month, the Astros have won, you know, 11 and 12. I go look at it. They're like 18-5 since the end of July.
Yeah, the Astros, Yankees, I've been referencing June, Zach, just so you know, since June 1st, Yankees have the 18th best record in baseball. They're one game under 500. The Astros have the second best record in baseball in that time, since June 1st.
I don't think we're catching them. Now, if they put Oswaldo at third, and you put, Jazz Chisholm at second when he comes back, you know what I mean? You got to put Leyva to the bench eventually. You got to wake these guys up. Like, you got to bring that old George Steinbrenner back. Like, somebody has to do it.
Well, I mean, I don't need to go the route of, and thank you for the call, Zach, the route of George, and I know we've referenced that plenty of times. It's just accountability. And maybe not being so nice. Like a caller said before, maybe the Yankees are being too nice. They don't want to hurt DJ's feelings. Hey, look, nothing personal. I got news for you. DJ LeMahieu's going to be just fine. The guy's made millions, hundreds of millions of dollars playing baseball. He'll be fine when it's over. It's over. You got to worry about you and the Yankees. Can't worry about feelings. Jazz comes back, he'll play third, and you have Gleyber at second. But right now, with Jazz being out, I don't know how LeMahieu shouldn't be on the team. And if the New York Yankees can't find somebody that's better at baseball or to help them win games more so than DJ LeMahieu at this point, I don't know what to tell you. Now, remember, this is a team that did try to bring in they brought in J.D. Davis and had a batting cleanup. I would rather see Ben Rice at first base every single day, and I'd rather see Oswaldo Cabrera in the lineup every single day than watch DJ LeMahieu. Those are better options to me. Those guys at least give you a chance. LeMahieu gives you no chance, automatic out, not to mention a liability everywhere else. I mean, what are we doing? Sal's in Brooklyn. What's up, Sal?
Shelly boy, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, Sal. How are you?
Hey, listen, when you go away and your boy gives you a parking spot, just to get rid of the anxiety and knowing you're going to pay $40 to park, throw him a C note and you're good. You
squared
everything up.
You think you're going to throw him a hundy?
Absolutely.
No, come on. I'd rather just pay $40 for parking. What do you mean? Give him
no. But that parking thing gives you anxiety, man.
Yeah,
come on,
I know,
think about
I know.
It. You went there knowing you were all relaxed, you were chill, it was worth it, bro.
Yeah, you know, it was a big hookup. I didn't have to worry about my wife complaining about the far walk or dragging the baby
that's
in a damn
worth
wagon.
The C-note?
No.
That's not worth the C-note?
No,
come on, Sally.
It may be, but that's what friends
sometimes,
are for. I mean, I don't think
sometimes.
I was gonna,
come on, you just got to do the right thing. That's your boy.
Yeah.
He hooked you up. There you go.
What
nice
about,
lunch.
What about like a bottle of wine or something? Or maybe like a
nice
gift card?
But you know
card.
What? Yeah. Well, okay, gift card, but make it a nice gift card. None less than $50. That's
okay.
It.
All right,
none
fair
less
enough.
Than 50.
I've already got you down. I've already got you down 50, so right, we're heading in the right direction. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. No, I said none less than 50.
Yeah,
anyway, with the Yankees. Hey, when I called earlier and they're 30, 40 games over 500. Both you guys wanted to jump on me because I said this team is flawed. Oh, a typical Yankee fan. They're 40 games over and he's still complaining. This team is flawed. First of all, again, I'd rather see Ben Rice than DJ. If you can't eat his money, get lost. You're not the Yankees. You put in a pinch runner yesterday who pulled a little league move. Rounding second, looking behind him at the ball. Don't pick up his coach, and then stutter steps at third, and when he's supposed to be a speed guy. No accountability with this team whatsoever. And come the playoffs, this 1-for-16 has haunted them since 2017. So they right. didn't address any issue, and they're just, I hate to say it, I love, if Judge and Soto can get hot separate days, not on the same day, then maybe they could squeeze through. But if they're both hot one series, then they're both going to cool off because it's baseball. You're not going to hit 600. Then we're going to be in. Everybody's going to be fire this one, fire that one. But they really haven't improved this team.
Very, very well said, Sal. Very good call. Now, the one thing is Judge and Soto have been hot all year. You can't expect them to every game, every at bat, every time there's a runner in scoring position where those guys come up to produce. They've done it the majority of time. You can't do it every time. They are human. And that's basically what the Yankees need. Every single time that those guys come up, everybody's expecting them to hit a home run or go nuts or drive in the game-winning run. Can't happen every time. But everything else I think you're spot on with. Wait, the runners in scoring position thing is not going to get it better in the postseason. Oh, and by the way, Judge has to prove that he could be the player that he's been in the regular season in the postseason. A lot of question marks still for the Yankees. And now, that being said, they're going to be in the postseason. And, hey, you know what? They have as good a chance as anybody else.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown. Wow, what a catch by the rookie.
Ridiculous.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
I wish that we had no scrubs. Unfortunately, a lot of what we're seeing is too many scrubs for both the baseball teams, and we'll see what happens with football coming up. Can't wait to get into that. A little note about the football stuff coming up next hour, but I want to get into the Mets from last night. BT and Sal on The Fan. BT out today. He'll be doing the Yankee game tonight along with Justin Shackle. BT will be in the booth filling in for Susan, who's under the weather, so BT will be in his... He'll get to live the dream being in the booth tonight with Shackle and tomorrow as well for the afternoon game. Kevin James was out at Citi Field last night. We'll get into that as well. But the Mets lost a game. They got crushed by the Orioles. And I shouldn't say they got crushed. They were getting crushed 7-1, but then they fought back. And that's something that I like about this team. J.D. Martinez maybe getting hot now. Homered again, second straight day with a home run for J.D. Martinez. So maybe that could get him going and have him be an impact bat here. The Mets are going to need it because they're going to have to hit their way into the postseason. Quintana was awful. But the big play for me last night came when Nimmo butchered that ball in left field that kind of opened the floodgates to where the Orioles ended up scoring a couple more runs in the ninth inning. Right after the Mets grabbed some momentum, cut the lead to 2, cut it to 7-5 with their 4-run eighth inning, as I mentioned, J.D. Martinez. Nimmo butchers a play in left field, 2-run score in the inning, and that was basically that. Now, look, the Orioles are good, and the Mets will play, as a matter of fact, in a little bit, I guess in a half hour or so, They'll play the rubber game of that three-game series out at Citi Field before they head for the West Coast trip, taking on the Diamondbacks and the Padres. That's not going to be easy here for the Mets. It's an important game today for the Mets to try to be able to win. But if Nimmo's not going to make that play, and I know he went to dive for it, and he made a great catch the other day Sunday. I was at the game, terrific diving catch. And Nimmo has been pretty solid in the outfield. You know, they made him into a center fielder, and he became serviceable in center field. But mostly he is a corner outfielder. If you're not going to make that play in left field, which he's got to make, legit, like, if it's a play that you or I could make, and I'm telling you confidently that's a play that I could have made, he's got to make it. If you're a major leaguer and you get your glove on it or near it, you've got to make the play. And Nimmo didn't. And not that the Mets would have come back and won, but it certainly ruined any chance of a comeback there. But my point is, if Brandon Nimmo is not going to make a play like that, you can't be hitting 229. You could live with subpar defense if the offense is worth it. And Brandon Nimmo, at his peak this year, was performing at an extremely high level offensively. And then you kind of overlook some of the other stuff, whether it's, you know, the base running or just not being good on the base paths or the, you know, average to below average defense. You could live with those things if he's hitting at a high level with power, with average, on base, whatever. He's never been a high average guy, but Brandon Nimmo, I don't know how you could be an impact bat. I don't know, even in today's game, the evolved game of baseball, I don't know how you could be a three hitter and be hitting 229. He's their three hitter and he's hitting 229. That's unacceptable. That can't happen. It's not good enough. And I'm not trying to pick on Brandon Nimmo. I'm just calling it how it is. And by the way, the Mets' struggles or the Mets' drop in play has been correlated to Brandon Nimmo falling off a cliff. You could argue that it's going to be on Brandon Nimmo to get them to the postseason. Lindor has done what he's done since being moved to the leadoff spot in what, mid-May or end of May? And the Mets have obviously taken off. Pete Alonso, while he's not having a good year, has been this way the entire year. Relatively non-impactful season, but it hasn't hurt the Mets. Hasn't helped them as much as it could, but it hasn't hurt them. So it's not like if I sit here and say, well, if Alonso gets it going, it's going to take to the Mets to the next level. It might, but they've been able to survive so far pretty well without Alonso having that big impact. You can name the other guys too. Alvarez has basically been what he's been all year long. You know, Iglesias, been consistent pretty much all year long. And even when he drops off a little bit, McNeil picks it back up. But the difference has been Nimmo. You know, Vientos been obviously a mainstay all year long. He's been consistent. The difference has been Nimmo. When Nimmo was at his best going on a tear, you know, the couple of weeks before the All-Star game or whatever, a month before the All-Star game, I don't know the exact time frame, but leading up to the All-Star game, we all started talking about, hey, he should be an All-Star along with Lindor. Certainly, Lindor first, Nimmo second, Alonso third, if at all. That's how well Nimmo was playing. Hitting with power, talking about how he changed his swing and it's worked, and looking like he was about to click and take off to that next level. The way Daniel Murphy did the final year in his Mets tenure, when he started hitting with some power in October, and then naturally the Mets let him go, of course. Of course. Oh, well, now you hit with power. Okay, now we'll let you go. Shove him down our throat for years. We're begging, hey, what does Murphy do? He's not a good defensive player. He'd admit that. Can't run. He also could admit that. He was a great hitter. He would admit that too. But he didn't even hit with power until he did in October. Then the Mets fittingly let him go then. Anyway, point is, with Brandon Nimmo, you thought maybe it was going to be Murphy-like, where he found something in his swing that he could take his game up a notch and find that power, which the Mets needed at the top of their order or in the heart of that order. 2-3 hole, whatever it may be. Now, like I said, now he's hitting third. But and that took the Mets with Nimmo and Lindor and Vientos, but Nimmo, Lindor mainly, turning their seasons around, taking their game to another play, another level. That got the Mets to another level. And then Nimmo falls off a cliff, and the Mets have also fallen back a little bit. It's going to be on Brandon Nimmo. You could live with his defense being average, below average at times, especially in the corner spot, but he's got a hit, and he's just not. 229 for a three hitter? That's acceptable? And he's driven in 72 runs. Okay, that's good. You know, the OPS 757, even with him struggling. But it shows you, like, what is Brandon Nimmo? We had this conversation with Volpe, and it's a lot different because Volpe's only in year two. I mean, Brandon Nimmo, by this point in his career, I mean, come on. You got to know what he is. And I don't know how you could say definitively that we know what he is. But he may be the key to the entire Mets season here, the rest of their run and in the postseason. But overall, however he ends up this year and however the Mets end up, I still don't have confidence. I want to believe in Nimmo. I still don't have the ultimate confidence that he's ever going to be the impact player that the Mets paid him to be and that they hoped he could be. I mean, is he even going to get to the 24 home runs that he hit last year? He's had his career high in ribbies. I don't know about the homers. And then you look at the average. I mean, last year he hit 274. He was a 274 hitter for in 2002 and 2003, 2022 and 2023. That's consistent. He's hitting 230, 229 to be exact this year. That's just not good enough.
It's happened. You talked about it on The Fan.
Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown. Wow, what a catch by the rookie.
Ridiculous.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
I wish that we had no scrubs. Unfortunately, a lot of what we're seeing is too many scrubs for both the baseball teams, and we'll see what happens with football coming up. Can't wait to get into that. A little note about the football stuff coming up next hour, but I want to get into the Mets from last night. BT and Sal on the Fan. BT out today. He'll be doing the Yankee game tonight along with Justin Shackle. BT will be in the booth filling in for Susan, who's under the weather. So BT will be in his... He'll get to live the dream being in the booth tonight with Shackle and tomorrow as well for the afternoon game. Kevin James was out at Citi Field last night. We'll get into that as well. But the Mets lost a game. They got crushed by the Orioles. I shouldn't say they got crushed. They were getting crushed 7-1, but then they fought back. And that's something that I like about this team. J.D. Martinez maybe getting hot now. Homered again, second straight day with a home run for J.D. Martinez. So maybe that could get him going and have him be an impact bat here. The Mets are going to need it because they're going to have to hit their way into the postseason. Quintana was awful. But the big play for me last night came when Nimmo butchered that ball in left field that kind of opened the floodgates to where the Orioles ended up scoring a couple more runs in the ninth inning. Right after the Mets grabbed some momentum, cut the lead to two, cut it to 7-5 with their four-run eighth inning, as I mentioned, J.D. Martinez. Nimmo butchers a play in left field, two-run score in the inning, and that was basically that. Now, look, the Orioles are good, and the Mets will play, as a matter of fact, in a little bit, I guess in a half hour or so, they'll play the rubber game of that three-game series out at Citi Field before they head for the West Coast trip, taking on the Diamondbacks and the Padres. That's not going to be easy here for the Mets. It's an important game today for the Mets to try to be able to win. But if Nimmo's not going to make that play, and I know he went to dive for it, and he made a great catch the other day Sunday. I was at the game, terrific diving catch. And Nimmo has been pretty solid in the outfield. You know, they made him into a center fielder, and he became serviceable in center field. But mostly he is a corner outfielder. If you're not going to make that play in left field, which he's got to make, legit, like, if it's a play that you or I could make, and I'm telling you confidently that's a play that I could have made, he's got to make it. If you're a major leaguer and you get your glove on it or near it, you've got to make the play. And Nimmo didn't, and not that the Mets would have come back and won, but it certainly ruined any chance of a comeback there. But my point is, if Brandon Nimmo is not going to make a play like that, you can't be hitting 229. You could live with subpar defense if the offense is worth it. And Brandon Nimmo, at his peak this year, was performing at an extremely high level offensively. And then you kind of overlook some of the other stuff, whether it's, you know, the base running or just not being good on the base paths or the, you know, average to below average defense. You could live with those things if he's hitting at a high level with power, with average, on base, whatever. He's never been a high average guy, but Brandon Nimmo, I don't know how you could be an impact bat. I don't know, even in today's game, the evolved game of baseball, I don't know how you could be a three hitter and be hitting 229. He's their three hitter and he's hitting 229. That's unacceptable. That can't happen. It's not good enough. And I'm not trying to pick on Brandon Nimmo. I'm just calling it how it is. And by the way, the Mets' struggles or the Mets' drop in play has been correlated to Brandon Nimmo falling off a cliff. You could argue that it's going to be on Brandon Nimmo to get them to the postseason. Lindor has done what he's done since being moved to the leadoff spot in what, mid-May or end of May? And the Mets have obviously taken off. Pete Alonso, while he's not having a good year, has been this way the entire year. Relatively non-impactful season, but it hasn't hurt the Mets. Hasn't helped them as much as it could, but it hasn't hurt them. So it's not like if I sit here and say, well, if Alonso gets it going, it's going to take to the Mets to the next level. It might, but they've been able to survive so far pretty well without Alonso having that big impact. You can name the other guys, too. Alvarez has basically been what he's been all year long. You know, Iglesias, been consistent pretty much all year long. And even when he drops off a little bit, McNeil picks it back up. But the difference has been Nimmo. You know, Vientos been obviously a mainstay all year long. He's been consistent. The difference has been Nimmo. When Nimmo was at his best going on a tear, you know, the couple of weeks before the All-Star game or whatever, a month before the All-Star game, I don't know the exact time frame, but leading up to the All-Star game, we all started talking about, hey, he should be an All-Star along with Lindor. Certainly Lindor first, Nimmo second, Alonso third, if at all. That's how well Nimmo was playing. Hitting with power, talking about how he changed his swing and it's worked, and looking like he was about to click and take off to that next level. The way Daniel Murphy did the final year in his Mets tenure, when he started hitting with some power in October, and then naturally the Mets let him go, of course. Of course. Oh, well, now you hit with power. Okay, now we'll let you go. Shove him down our throat for years. We're begging, hey, what does Murphy do? He's not a good defensive player. He'd admit that. Can't run. He also could admit that. He was a great hitter. He would admit that too. But he didn't even hit with power until he did in October. Then the Mets fittingly let him go then. Anyway, point is, with Brandon Nimmo, you thought maybe it was going to be Murphy-like, where he found something in his swing that he could take his game up a notch and find that power, which the Mets needed at the top of their order or in the heart of that order. Two, three hole, whatever it may be. Now, like I said, now he's getting third. But and that took the Mets with Nimmo and Lindor and Vientos, but Nimmo, Lindor mainly, turning their seasons around, taking their game to another play, another level. That got the Mets to another level. And then Nimmo falls off a cliff, and the Mets have also fallen back a little bit. It's going to be on Brandon Nimmo. You could live with his defense being average, below average at times, especially in the corner spot, but he's got a hit, and he's just not. 229 for a three-hitter? That's acceptable? And he's driven in 72 runs, okay, that's good. You know, the OPS 757, even with him struggling, but it shows you, like, what is Brandon Nimmo? We had this conversation with Volpe, and it's a lot different because Volpe's only in year two. I mean, Brandon Nimmo, by this point in his career, I mean, come on. You got to know what he is. And I don't know how you could say definitively that we know what he is. But he may be the key to the entire Mets season here, the rest of their run and in the postseason. But overall, however he ends up this year, and however the Mets end up, I still don't have confidence. I want to believe in Nimmo. I still don't have the ultimate confidence that he's ever going to be the impact player that the Mets paid him to be and that they hoped he could be. I mean, is he even going to get to the 24 home runs that he hit last year? He's had his career high in ribbies. I don't know about the homers. And then you look at the average. I mean, last year he hit 274. He was a 274 hitter for in 2002 and 2003, 2022 and 2023. That's consistent. He's hitting 230, 229 to be exact this year. That's just not good enough.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.